Chapter 43. The Crown of Roses. Marana's hired coach swayed its slow way through the densely packed streets toward the Crown of Roses. Outwardly, she was calm, at least, a dark-haired woman with cool, hazel eyes, slim-fingered hands folded peacefully on her pale gray silk skirts. Inside, she was not so serene. 38 years ago, she had been in place by chance to negotiate a treaty between Arad-Doman and Tarabon that was supposed to put an end to the squabbling over Almuth Plain, with Domani and Taraboners dodging at every turn, and three times nearly starting a war in the middle of the exchanges, and all the while maintaining smiling faces of utter goodwill. By the time the signatures were dry, she felt as if she had been rolled over rough hills in a barrel full of splinters, and after all that, the treaty turned out to be worth considerably less than the wax and ribbons for its seals. She hoped what she had begun this afternoon at the Royal Palace ended better. It had to. But inside, she felt as though she had just climbed out of another barrel. Min was sitting back with her eyes closed. The young woman seemed to take catnaps any time an Aes Sedai was not actually speaking to her. The other two sisters in the coach occasionally shot quick glances at the girl. Cianid, cool and reserved in her brocaded green. Masuri, slim and merry-eyed in brown embroidered with flowering vines around the hem. They had all dressed formally, in shawls and Aja colors. Marana was sure they had the same thought as herself when they looked at Min. Cianid could certainly understand, though who could be certain? Cianid was very methodical and practical about her warders, almost like a woman with a pair of prize wolfhounds she felt some affection for. Masura might understand. She did like to dance, and even flirt, though she was liable to forget the poor man when she heard a rumor of an old manuscript hidden away. Marana herself had not been in love since well before that fifth treaty of Falma, but she did remember, and all that had taken was one glimpse of Min staring at Al-Thor, to see a woman who had tossed sense out the window and was riding her heart at a gallop. Not proof that Min had ignored all their cautions, broken her promise, and told Al-Thor everything, but he knew about Zalidar. He knew Elaine was there, and had been amused at their evasions. Aside from whether Min had broken confidence, care would have to be used in what was said around her from now on in any case. It was frightening when taken with everything else. Marana was not used to being frightened. She had been, often, in the year after Basin died. She had never bonded another warder, at least partly because she did not want to go through that again, and also partly because she was simply too busy to search out the right man. But that was the last time she had known anything more than apprehension before the Aiel War. Now she felt fear, and she did not like it. Everything could still go well. Nothing truly disastrous had happened, but Al-Thor himself turned her knees to water. The hired coach rocked to a stop in the stable yard of the Crown of Roses. Stablemen in vests worked with roses, rushing out to take bridles and open doors. The common room suited the three stories of finely dressed white stone, all dark polished panels, with tall fireplaces faced in white marble. One mantelpiece held a wide clock, with chimes for the hours and a few lines of gilding. The serving women wore blue dresses and white aprons embroidered with a ring of roses. They were all smiling, polite, efficient, and those not pretty were handsome. The Crown of Roses was a favorite of nobles in from the country who had no mansions of their own in Camelin, but now the tables held only warders, and Alana and Varin seated at the rear. Had Marana had her wishes, they would have been waiting in the kitchens with the servants. The rest of the sisters were all out. There was no time to waste. "If you don't mind," Min said, "I would like to walk around. I'd like to see some of Camelin before dark." Marana gave her assent, and as the young woman darted back outside, exchanged looks with Cianid and Masuri, wondering how long it would take Min to return to the palace. Mistress Sinchonin appeared at once, as round as any innkeeper Marana had ever seen, bobbing bows and dry-washing her pink hands. "Is there anything I can do for you, Aes Sedai? Anything I can fetch?" She had accommodated Marana often, and well, both before and after learning she was Aes Sedai. "Berry tea," Marana told her, smiling, "in the private sitting room upstairs." The smile went as the innkeeper scurried away, calling for one of the serving women. Marana motioned sharply for Alana and Varen to join her on the stairs, and the five of them climbed in silence. The sitting room windows gave a good view of the street for those who wished it, which Marana did not particularly. She pulled in the windows that were open to shut out some of the noise, and turned her back on them. Sionid and Masuri had taken chairs. Alana and Varen remained standing between the other two. Varen's dark wool dress had an air of being rumpled, though it was not, and she had an ink stain on the tip of her nose, but her eyes were bird-like, sharp and watchful. Alana's eyes shone too, but very likely with anger, and now and then her hands quivered slightly, gripping the skirts of her yellow bodiced blue silk dress. It looked as if she had slept in it. There was some excuse for her, of course. Some, but not enough. "I do not know yet, Alana," Marana said firmly, "whether your actions have had any adverse effect. He did not bring up your bonding him against his will, but he was sharp, very sharp, and—" "Has he set further restrictions?" Varen broke in, tilting her head slightly. "All seems to be going well, to me. He did not fly away at news of you. He has received 3, in some courtesy, at least, or you would be at Sunderheads. He is a little frightened of us, which is to the good, or he would not have set limits. But unless he has set more, we still have as much freedom as before, so he is not terrified. Above all, we must not frighten him too far." The difficulty was that Varen and Alana were not part of Marana's delegation. She had no authority over them. They had heard the news of Loghain and the Reds and agreed that Elida could not be allowed to remain in the Ammerlin seat, yet that meant nothing. Of course, Alana was not really a problem, only potentially. She and Marana were so close in strength that the only way to say which had the greater would be an actual contest, the sort of thing novices did until they were caught. Alana had been 6 years a novice, Marana only 5, but more importantly, Marana had been Aes Sedai 10 years the day the midwife laid Alana at her mother's breast. That took care of that. Marana had precedence. No one actually thought in those terms unless something made them, but they both knew and adjusted automatically. Not that Alana would take orders, yet instinctive deference would surely keep her in hand to some degree. That, and knowing what she had done. Varen was the problem, the one who had Marana thinking of strengths and precedents. Marana let herself sense the other woman's strength in the power again, though of course she knew what she would find. No way to tell which of them was stronger. 5 years as novice for each, 6 as accepted. That was one thing every Aes Sedai knew about every other if she knew nothing else. The difference was that Varen was older, maybe almost as much older than she as she was older than Alana. The touch of gray in Varen's hair emphasized it. Had Varen been part of the embassy, there would have been no difficulty at all, but she was not, and Marana found herself listening attentively, deferring without thinking. Twice in the morning she had had to remind herself that Varen was not in charge. The only thing that made the situation tolerable was that Varen must feel she shared some of Alana's guilt. Without that, she surely would have been in a chair as soon as anyone else, not standing beside Alana. If only there were some way to make her remain at Kulain's Hound, day and night, to watch over that wonderful treasure of girls from the Two Rivers. Seating herself so she, Sionid, and Masuri surrounded the pair, Marana adjusted her skirts and shawl carefully. There was some moral ascendancy in being seated while the others remained standing. To her, what Alana had done was little short of rape. "In fact, he has placed another restriction. It is all very well that you two have located his school, but now I strongly suggest you abandon whatever thoughts you may have had in that direction. He has charged us to stay away from his men." She could see him still, leaning forward in that monstrosity of a throne with the lion throne on exhibit behind him and a carved piece of spear in his fist. No doubt an Aiel custom, that. "Hear me, Marana Sedai," he said, quite pleasantly and quite firmly. "I want no trouble between Aes Sedai and Ashaman. I have told the soldiers to stay clear of you, but I do not mean them to be Aes Sedai meat. If you go hunting at the Black Tower, you may be dinner yourself. We both want to avoid that." Marana had been Aes Sedai long enough not to shiver every time a goose walked over her grave, but it was close this time. Ashaman, the Black Tower, Mazrim time. How could it have gone so far? Yet Alana was certain there were over 100 men, though she gave no details of how she knew, of course. No sister willingly exposed her eyes and ears. It did not matter. If you pursue two hares, both will escape you, the old saying went, and Althor was the most important hare in the world. The others had to wait. Is he still here, or has he gone? Verin and Alana seemed to take it very calmly that Althor apparently could travel. It still made Marana a trifle queasy. What else had he taught himself that Aes Sedai had forgotten? Alana? Alana! The slender green sister jerked, pulling herself back from wherever her mind had been. She seemed to drift quite often. He is in the city, in the palace, I think. She still sounded a little dreamy. He has a wound in his side, an old wound yet only half healed. Every time I let myself dwell on it, I want to weep. How can he live with it? Cyanid gave her a sharp look. Any woman who had a warder had felt his injuries, but she knew what Alana was going through, having lost Owen, and when she spoke, her voice was almost gentle and only a little brisk. Why, Terrell and Furin have taken wounds that almost made me faint, even feeling them as softly as we do, and they never slowed a step, not one step. I think, Masuri said quietly, we are going afield. She always spoke quietly, but unlike many Browns, always to the point. Marana nodded. Yes, I considered taking Moiraine's place with him. A rap at the door announced a white-aproned woman with the tea tray, a silver teapot and porcelain cups. The Crown and Rose was used to the nobility. By the time the tray was settled and the serving woman gone, Alana was no longer dreamy. Her dark eyes flashed with all the fire Marana had ever seen in them. Greens, particularly, were jealous of their warders, and Althor belonged to her now, however she had bonded him. Deference went down the well when it came to that. Straight as a blade she stood, just waiting for Marana's next words to see whether to slash and cut. Still, Marana waited until the blueberry tea was poured and everyone back in her chair. She even told Verin and Alana to sit. The fool woman deserved a little upset, even atop Owen. Maybe it was not short of rape at all. I considered it, she went on at last, and rejected it. I might have done so if you had not done what you did, Alana, but he is so suspicious of Aes Sedai now that he might well laugh in my face if I suggested it. He is as arrogant as any king, Cyanid said curtly. Everything Elaine and Nynaeve said, and more, Masuri added, shaking her head, claiming that he knows when a woman channels. I almost embraced Sidar to show him he was mistaken, but of course whatever I did to show him might have alarmed him too much. All those Aiel. Cyanid's voice was tight. She was Kyrianan. Men and women. I think they would have tried to spear us if we blinked too quickly. One, a sun-haired woman who was at least wearing skirts, made no effort at all to hide her dislike. At times, Marana thought, Cyanid did not fully realize that Althor himself might be a danger. Alana unconsciously began chewing her underlip like a girl. It was good she had Verin to take care of her. She was not fit to be out alone in her state. Verin merely sipped her tea and watched, Varen's eyes could be most disconcerting. Marana found herself relenting. She remembered too well the fragile bundle of nerves she had been after Baron. Fortunately, it seems there may be a good side to his suspicion. He has received emissaries from Elida in Kyrian. He was quite open about it. Suspicion will make him keep them at a long arm's length, I believe. Cyanide rested her cup in its saucer. He thinks to play us one against the other. And he might still, Masuri said dryly, except that we know more of him than Elida possibly can. I think she must have sent her envoys to meet a shepherd, if a shepherd in a silk coat. Whatever he is no longer that. Moiraine taught him well, it seems. We were forearmed, Mirana said. I think it unlikely they were. Alana stared at them, blinking. Then I have not ruined everything? They all three nodded, and she took a deep breath, then smoothed at her skirts with a frown, as if just noticing the wrinkles. I may yet be able to make him accept me. The wrinkles were abandoned, and her face and voice became calmer and more confident by the word. As for his amnesty, we may have to hold any plans in abeyance, but that doesn't mean we should not make them. That sort of danger cannot be ignored. For a moment, Mirana regretted her relenting. The woman had done that to a man, and all that truly worried her was whether it damaged their chance of success. Reluctantly, though, she admitted that had it made Althor biddable, she would have held her nose and her tongue. First, we must bring Althor to heel, so to speak. The abeyance will last as long as it must, Alana. Alana's mouth tightened, but after a moment she nodded in acquiescence, or at least assent. And how is he to be brought to heel? Varen asked. He must be handled delicately. A wolf on a leash one thread thick. Mirana hesitated. She had not meant to share everything with this pair, who had only the most tenuous allegiance to the hall in Salidar. She dreaded what would happen if Varen tried to take over here, if in fact she did manage to take over. She herself knew how to handle this. She had been chosen because of a lifetime spent mediating sensitive disputes, negotiating treaties where the hatred seemed implacable. That agreements were broken eventually and treaties violated was the nature of humanity. Yet in 46 years, the 5th Treaty of Falma was her only real failure. She knew all of that, but all of those years had ingrained some instincts deeply. We are approaching certain nobles, who by good luck are all in Camelin now. My worry is Elaine, Dailan said firmly. The more firmly for being alone in the sitting room with an Aes Sedai. Aes Sedai could press hard if you weakened when you were alone, especially when no one else knew you were alone with her. Karen Sedai smiled, but neither smile nor cool blue eyes gave away anything. It is quite possible the daughter heir will yet be found to sit on the Lion Throne. What may seem insurmountable to others is seldom so to Aes Sedai. The Dragon Reborn says, Men say many things, Lady Dailan, but you know I do not lie.
Luan patted the Tyran stallion's gray neck, looking both ways in case one of the grooms came into the stables, and barely dodged a bite from wicked teeth. Rafella's warder would give warning, but Luan was not sure he trusted anyone of late. Especially not with a visit of this sort.
I am not sure I understand, he said curtly.
Unity is better than division, Rafella said. Peace better than war. Patience better than death.
Luan's head jerked at the odd end to the platitudes, and the round-faced Aes Sedai smiled.
Will Andor not be better off if Randalthor leaves the land in peace and unity, Lord Luan?
Holding her robe shut, Elorian stared at the Aes Sedai who had managed to reach her in her bath without being announced, possibly without being seen. The coppery-skinned woman looked back from the stool on the other side of the marble tub full of water as though this were all natural and ordinary. Who, Elorian asked finally, would have the lion throne then, Demira Sedai? The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, was the reply, and Elorian knew she would get no other.